Hello and welcome to lesson number 10 in our series on contextual psychology. Again, I'm Dr. Richard Nongard, and you're listening here on fastceus.com. And in today's lesson, lesson number 10, I'm going to focus on emotion modulation and the art of distress tolerance training, which I think is one of the most important things that we can teach our clients. And I'm actually going to go through some demonstrations with you. So this is, again, probably one of those MP3s you don't want to be listening to in the car. You might want to skip over to the next one and then come back to this one if you're driving a car. But emotion modulation skills in DBT are really important. In order to modulate their emotions, clients have to learn how to understand what an emotion is, how it functions, and how to experience them without being overwhelmed. Overwhelm is one of the greatest frustrations to the clients that we work with. It's what precipitates crisis with many of them. Emotional regulation skills also help a client to recognize more clearly what they feel, and they learn to observe each emotion without becoming overwhelmed by it through practicing these skills. Emotion regulation skills are designed to substitute destructive coping strategies. Essentially, what we're doing is we're replacing an old pattern with a new pattern. That's why it needs to be practiced. They say, whoever they are, and they seem to say a lot, that it takes 21 days to make a habit, which is why I often give clients the assignment to practice something on a daily basis for the next 7 days, and then I'll have them continue that for the next 7 days, and then for another 7 days until we reach 21 days. It's my assumption that on the 21st day of practice, they probably have incorporated this into their lifestyle. The goal of these skills is to modulate their feelings without behaving in a reactive or destructive way. And the easiest way to stop a reactive or destructive behavior is not to try to stop it. That only creates a greater urge. This is the paradox of the yellow Jeep exercise from acceptance and commitment therapy. The only way to eliminate a reactive or destructive manner is to replace it and to have the replacement behavior practiced so that it becomes the new norm. The main skills that are taught in emotional regulation include understanding emotions. You know, we use these words, and these words really don't have a meaning to our clients. They have become anger, or they have become depressed, or they have become anxious. And for every adjective that we use to describe an emotion, they can be experienced as either a primary emotion or as a secondary emotion. I feel hurt, but that's because I'm scared, the secondary emotion. I'm angry, but that's because I'm hurt. I'm happy, that's because I'm connected. And so for every primary emotion, there's always a secondary emotion. And asking my clients to describe their emotions with an adjective and then to look for the accompanying emotions is a simple exercise, but a powerful exercise in helping my clients to see how these things are really coexisting and relating. Another skill is teaching clients how emotions function. And they function for three reasons: to communicate to other people, to motivate me to action, or to be self-validating. Emotions are neither good nor bad, they just are what they are. The non-judgmental attitude of mindfulness. And I let my clients have and own whatever emotion it is that they feel, because that self-validation is important. I teach my clients how to experience emotions without feeling a sense of overwhelm. One of the ways to do that is to have our client practice mindfulness and put some space between them and their emotion, to experience it as an observer rather than experience it from that first perceptual position. Dialectical Behavioral Therapy tries real hard to make an acronym here, and the acronym is PLEASE MASTER, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. But the idea here is to reduce emotional vulnerability. That's clearly a need that our clients have. The acronym that DBT uses is PLEASE MASTER, but I think it's so hard to remember the acronym, then you may as well just teach the attributes of this. DBT tries to make an acronym out of the following: treat physical illness, balance your eating, avoid mood-altering drugs, balance your sleep, get exercise, and build mastery of emotions by doing these things. The acronym that DBT tries to come up with uses a variety of different letters in there that spell out "please master." But really what we're talking here about here is what Alcoholics Anonymous has been saying for years. In 12-step meetings, we have heard HALT. Never get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. That's an easy acronym to remember. But the concept here is the same. We are only as well emotionally as we are physically. I got certified probably about 10 or 12 years ago as a personal fitness trainer, and I didn't get certified as a personal fitness trainer because I was planning to work with clients at a gym or in some sort of fitness setting. I actually have, this goes back probably a little more than 10 or 12 years ago, but to that point in life, I really hadn't gone to the gym, I hadn't exercised, I hadn't worked out. But I recognized as I was getting a little bit older that I probably needed to go to the gym. And so I joined the gym, and when you join the gym, you got 2 free sessions with a personal trainer. And my personal trainer, his name was Jared, and he was so helpful to me and so valuable to me, I purchased more sessions with my personal trainer. One day I was working out with him, and all of the trainers at this gym wore purple shirts. And so I was working out in my corner of the gym with him doing my thing, and I was observing all the way across the gym, there was a trainer, because they were wearing that purple shirt, standing next to a treadmill, and on the treadmill was a person who was about 400 pounds, and they were just slowly walking on that treadmill, one painful step at a time. And this went on for about 40 minutes, and I didn't meet them, I didn't talk to them, I don't know what was going on over there, but since I treat obesity in my office, I recognize that it is a clinical issue for psychology, counseling, and social work. I left my session, the gym, and I started to drive home, and I thought to myself, wow, that personal trainer actually just did a therapy session. But instead of talking to a client about the change they could take when they left the office, that trainer actually was participating in change with the client. And I thought to myself, sort of metaphorically, what if we replaced the therapy couch in our office with a treadmill? Because even if I'm not treating obese clients, even if I'm treating depressed clients or addicted clients or anxious clients or families, people only are emotionally able to function as well as they are physically. I became so intrigued by the idea, I thought, forget about the metaphor, let's actually put a treadmill in the office. And I actually became certified as a personal fitness trainer because I wanted that base of knowledge to help me make the connection between physical wellness and emotional wellness. Dialectical Behavioral Therapy, even though they have their acronym screwed up, please master, touches on some things here that are vital to helping our clients reduce emotional vulnerability, treat physical illness, balance your eating, avoid mood-altering drugs, balance your sleep, get exercise, and this builds mastery. Or as Alcoholics Anonymous said, never get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I know in my own life when I don't get enough exercise. I know in my own life when I'm not eating right. I know in my own life when I'm not sleeping right, it's real difficult for me to function in an emotionally positive way. Another skill for emotional regulation includes helping our client to build positive experiences. Part of the therapeutic process should be entering into positive experiences with them so that they have a basis for experiencing positive experiences in our office, which translates into an ability to build positive experiences apart from the office. Another strategy for emotional modulation is the opposite to emotion, action. The paradox here is that when we instruct clients to act on the opposite of the emotional urge they feel, it can help them to gain emotional regulation. Now, this is not something you're going to use with those who are high functioning clients who have very few difficulties at this point or are nearing the end of therapy. But when we have clients at the beginning of therapy who are very impulsive, very quick to anger, who act before they think, teaching them simply the paradox of acting the opposite of their urge is a great way to help them enter into the practice of modulating their emotions. And of course, another technique is to help our clients check the facts. When you feel something, check the facts. Check the facts by asking. Check the facts by observing. Check the facts by stepping back from a situation before you take action and try to see a whole or a bigger picture, or even putting yourself in the vantage point of somebody else. Right now, one of the big sayings sort of in the social justice movements and in politics and world change is pay it forward. Well, dialectical behavioral therapy has this concept in relation to emotional modulation. Cope ahead. In other words, rehearse what it is that you can do when you find yourself in difficult situations. I see a lot of clients for fear of public speaking. I live in an area where I have a lot of people who, for some reason, well, I know the reason, they are both geologists, usually with a PhD in geology, and attorneys. The reason why is I live in an area of the country where there are a lot of oil companies, and these guys are geologists and attorneys, and they work for the oil companies. What's interesting about them, though, is that for the most part, they've been writing scientific journals and oil and gas exploration or whatever it is that they do, or from a legal perspective, writing policy related to, you know, environmental concern or management or whatever it is that these geologist attorneys do with the oil company. Even though they're licensed as attorneys, few of them ever are in the are in a courtroom. Few of them ever have to testify in public. Most of them who I've worked with are quietly writing documents and other things for the oil companies where they work. Years ago, I actually had one of them call me up and say, hey, I've been a lawyer for 25 years and I've never been in court, and suddenly, on behalf of the oil company, I'm actually having to take a case or go on a case to court, and I'm afraid to speak in front of public. This was a guy with a PhD, was an expert in his subject. So I worked with him to overcome his fear of public speaking, and since then I've built a large network of referrals, particularly in the oil and gas industry, of really guys who are fairly similar, executives and lawyers who, for one reason or another, have a fear of making presentations, testifying before Congress, trying a case in court, defending their positions in a public forum, or whatever it is that they need to do. With almost all of these folks, what I do is guide them through a process of coping ahead, of visualizing themselves. This really is the same technique that coaches use in athletics to help a person experience winning the game before the game takes place. Because we know, back to what I talked about with Charles Hanel, that everything that is a reality had to be a thought first. And so for our client to experience success in a future problem, if I can create an opportunity to help them future pace, as it's sometimes called, or cope ahead, as dialectical behavioral therapy calls it, or employ rehearsal techniques, as coaching and personal fitness training might call it, I can help my clients to modulate distressing emotions. And of course, any set of problem-solving skills are useful skills to teach our clients in dialectical behavioral therapy. In dialectical behavioral therapy, there are really two types of distress tolerance strategies. And I'm also going to share with you some specific methods I'm going to guide you through of enhancing distress tolerance skills. The first of these two types is acceptance. We've talked about that really a great deal in acceptance and commitment therapy, and really the ideas in DBT are fairly similar. In DBT, the idea of acceptance is developing the ability to accept the situation and themselves without judgment. The strategy assumes that emotional suffering is a part of life and that avoiding this reality leads to increased emotional suffering. Acceptance is learned through breathing and awareness exercises. those simple strategies from Patient Education 101 of belly breathing. It's one of my favorite techniques to teach clients who are experiencing distress. By the way, I want you to try it right now while you're listening to this MP3. Just take in a deep breath right now. Take in a deep breath, breathe in, okay, and now exhale. Now, I can't see you, but chances are pretty good you did what I did the first time my friend Ron Esslinger, who's a nurse, he's a nurse anesthetist, who taught me this exercise, observed. If I could see you somehow through the speakers and watch what you just did, chances are pretty good you puffed up the chest a bit, you breathed through your nose, you breathed down into the lungs, and you exhaled, and your body probably collapsed a little bit when you exhaled. What's interesting about that is that we tend to almost always breathe like that when we take a deep breath, when we're told to take a deep breath. We puff up that chest, we push that neck back a little bit, we breathe in. But what we do when we do that, when we breathe with the chest, is we actually only get air to the top part of the lungs. We don't get oxygen to the lowest part of the lungs. It doesn't effectively reach the heart and every cell of the body and drive the benefit that it does through a good belly breath. It also tenses up those muscles in the neck and shoulders. That's where the collapsing comes from. So I'm going to teach you a technique that you can teach your clients that my friend Ron taught me. As you sit in the chair, just sit in the chair comfortably with your back and spine aligned and erect. You don't have to puff out the chest at all. Just let your arms rest to the side for a moment. And pay attention to the belly. In fact, you can even rest your hands, cross your hands and put them across the belly if you'd like. Now imagine something. Imagine that inside of your belly, inside of your stomach, is a balloon like a kid might have, a helium-filled balloon, but imagine there's no air in it. It's just an empty balloon and it's inside of your belly. Now the way I want you to breathe right now is to breathe by imagining that you're filling that balloon up with air. Go ahead, breathe in. Imagine that you're filling that balloon up with air. And notice how the chest stays the same and the belly fills up. And now exhale by just letting the air out of the balloon. Again, breathe in by filling up that balloon, fill it up with air all the way in. And then exhale by letting the air out of the balloon. Do you notice a huge difference? In fact, go ahead and open your eyes. Chances are you feel wonderful from that burst of oxygen that you've just experienced going all the way to the lowest part of the lungs without increasing any tension or stress in the shoulders or neck. That's a simple strategy, but it's a strategy that I teach to every one of my clients who is quitting smoking. Almost all of my clients say, yeah, in the morning I need a cigarette or two to get going. And nicotine for them is a vasoconstrictor. It's a stimulant. It provides energy. And so they are probably dependent on that energy just like other clients are dependent on carbohydrates. And so since they don't have a cigarette anymore and need that energy, I teach my client to start the day with a couple of breaths like this. Because when oxygen goes to the deepest part of the lungs and then goes through the heart and through every cell of the body, they get a blast of energy as powerful and more powerful than that produced by the drug nicotine. Crisis skills are other distress tolerance strategies that I teach to my clients. These strategies focus on finding new ways to survive and manage the moment without resorting to problem behavior. There are really four sets of crisis survival skills that clients learn in DBT. This includes distracting, self-soothing, improving the moment, and thinking about the pros and cons. And they really are done just like this. I do this with a lot of clients. Take out a piece of paper on the left, right pros, on the right, right cons, and let's list out, what strategies you could employ here. Sometimes for my client, when they come in my office and they're experiencing crisis, I ask them this real simple question. I recognize that you're in crisis and that's painful and difficult. Is there anything you can do right now to improve the moment? It's not something they've ever thought about before. Sometimes that question catches them off guard, but they'll come up with an answer if I'm quiet and wait for the answer. By the way, that's one of the hardest things for therapists to do, to be quiet and wait for the answer. I've had to learn that as a strategy in my therapeutic interviewing, but it's a strategy that's been really helpful to me. Self-soothing. I teach my clients body scan meditations. If anyone's taken a yoga class, you may have called it a savasana, and that comes at the end of a yoga session. And I teach those techniques to my clients. The skills of distracting. Wow, what a basic set of skills, but they're really pretty effective. Teach my client to pay attention to something else. And this is really what mindfulness can teach them, even if it's paying attention to something as simple as the breath. Acceptance strategies for distress tolerance are usually addressed within mindfulness techniques, which we've discussed throughout this course, but each of the crisis management strategies incorporate acceptance principles. And there's an acronym that is used in dialectical behavioral therapy called ACCEPTS. And the acronym stands for do activities that promote distraction or acceptance. Contributing. Contribute to others, to the world around you. Comparisons. Compare how well you're doing now to how in the past you may have previously not done so well. Emotions. Scale your emotions into perspective. Push away. That's the P. By practicing mindfulness and putting some space between you and your T thoughts. And just be aware of your sensations. Each of these can be built on a little bit. Activities. Clients are encouraged to distract for themselves with pleasant activities. Hobbies, going for a walk, cooking. Cooking's my hobby. You can even go to YouTube and you can type in NonGuard recipe. You find a bunch of cooking videos of mine. Gardening, watching a movie, playing a sport. By the way, have your clients write down a list of pleasant activities that they like to do. Ask them to commit to the valued path, borrowing from ACT therapy, to engaging in one of those activities when they find themselves in crisis. Contributing, clients are encouraged to volunteer, to do something nice for a friend or to help somebody. This is one of the premises, again, of Alcoholics Anonymous. They say if you're new to a meeting, you know, what should you do if you're a newcomer? Well, you should stack chairs and empty ashtrays. Why? It's about getting out of yourself and getting into the life of other people. As for comparisons, client compared themselves to others who are coping at similar levels or less than them. They can also compare themselves to how they were coping 1 or 5 years prior, and hopefully they'll see success. As far as emotions, this strategy is for clients to distract themselves with opposite emotions. For example, if they're sad, they're encouraged to go watch a comedy movie. Listen to a happy song. By the way, that's one of the most important things, especially if you work with adolescents. Find out what they're listening to and change their playlist. Doesn't mean they have to stop listening to that sad, depressing music they love. They just need to listen to Gilbert O'Sullivan when they're doing fine, not when they're experiencing crisis. Clients can learn how to distract themselves by pushing away distressing situations and dealing with it later. I think it's perfectly okay to take a time out to block a distressing situation from the mind and say, you know what, that's coming up, or that was the past. Right now, I'm just going to breathe. Clients can distract themselves with thoughts, other negative and distressing ones, and learning to count from 1 to 10 or focus on the stars in the sky can keep them focused on anything other than their negative thoughts. And I like to teach clients to distract themselves from emotional turmoil through other body sensations. Hold ice. It's like a rubber band on your wrist. These sensations produce shock. They distract people from emotional pain. They are exercises that can be useful to replace self-cutting or self-injurious behavior. Really, any opposite sensation can be created. And following a sensation distraction, the client might then engage in an activity distraction that we described a little while ago. Another strategy for tolerating negative emotions is to improve the moment by staying mindful. IMPROVE is another acronym in dialectical behavioral therapy, and it is used to remember these skills. The acronym IMPROVE stands for Improve Mental Imagery. M stands for meaning. Find that which is valuable to you in the moment. P is prayer. Prayer is a useful way within the context of our client's faith to be in the moment. Relaxation. I'm surprised at how many therapists do not teach clients progressive muscle relaxation, autogenic training, self-hypnosis. The efficacy of these approaches is extremely well documented. Many of you may remember in the 1970s, Herbert Benson, a Harvard psychiatrist, wrote a book called The Relaxation Response. And it was a very popular book in therapy, and it should still be a very popular book in therapy. Relaxation techniques are extremely useful and extremely helpful to our clients. It is the basis of developing the skill of taking physical control over this emotion. Progressive muscle relaxation and autogenic training in particular are two excellent skills for doing that. And then the O stands for improve one thing at a time. One thing at a time. Take a vacation, maybe not a real vacation, but a mental vacation. Step outside for a moment. My back patio at my house is my place for a vacation. Sometimes I decide I'm just going to take the laptop out there and work. Or maybe work out there without the laptop. My 6-year-old stepdaughter and I, a couple weeks ago, decided to go outside and make lemonade with fruit in it and simply sit out there and have a little mini vacation. And that's exactly what we did. It was awesome. And the lemonade was good too. And the E stands for encourage, positive self-talk. Remember that book? I think I can. I think I can. I think I can. I want my clients to use positive affirmations that we talked about in a previous lesson, and it fits well within the ideas of dialectical behavioral therapy. Now, because you've done a great job and you've gone through almost all 12 of these lessons to this point, it's time to earn CEUs again with the eyes closed. And I'm going to share with you a relaxation training strategy that I share with almost all of my clients. And so, as long as you're not driving a car, find a comfortable spot where you can relax. You can lay on the floor. You can sit in your chair. This session is not designed to help you sleep. It's designed to help you use the principles of relaxation to help you end any feeling of anxiety, anger, or depression. You can come back to this often, and you can learn how to practice these principles by going through this exercise at a future date as well. Many people who use the principles of relaxation find that by taking a moment in the middle of life's turmoil to recenter themselves, it's a great way to relax. And you might even wonder, can something so simple really help you? And the answer is yes. There is hope for ending depression, and it comes from the desire to be happy that's already within you. You can find calm from anxiety, and you can even give up stress, anger, or frustration by really practicing these simple ideas. And as a therapist, you can go through the script that I've provided in the handout and actually use this with clients. I tell all my clients to take a moment to turn off the ringer on their phone, to close the door. And if you haven't done that yet, you should pause this MP3 and you should go do that. Now, I originally created the script for a video that I used. And I placed that video up on YouTube, and I put in the background the image of a waterfall that I had taken when I was actually on a real vacation. But since you're not watching a video right now, go ahead and close your eyes and simply imagine a beautiful waterfall. I love water. For some reason, watching water move always brings me a sense of peace, whether it's a waterfall or a mountain, a fountain. Perhaps it's because moving water represents the power of life, or perhaps because the movement simply distracts me from my stress. Either way, I find that every time I watch water move, whether in the sea, a fountain, or a waterfall, for some reason I feel calm. And so as you relax, creating that image in your mind of a relaxing waterfall or a moving pool of water, simply scan your whole body, and anywhere that you're holding the tension of the day, let those muscles become loose and relaxed. Often we don't even notice where we're carrying the tension until we notice it and make a conscious choice to relax those muscles. As you mindfully focus your attention on the creative part of your mind to imagine a waterfall, let the water flow and let any immediate stress or anxiety flow with the water from you and into a far and distant place. And imagine for a moment the feeling not only of the water moving, but also your stress moving with it. Many will find that easy to do, but others won't find it an easy thing to do. Perhaps that's because the stress has been a part of life for so long. Letting it flow is something that takes time for some people, and that's perfectly okay as well. But notice how by just using this visualization, your mind has become more relaxed. Your body's become more relaxed. Your eyes have become tired and heavy. In fact, you'll find that even though you know you could open your eyes if you wanted to, it feels so awesome to just earn CEUs with the eyes closed. You'll just let them stay closed as you continue to use your imagination to drift into the scenery of a waterfall or pool of water or calm sea. Now notice your breath, smooth and rhythmic. It isn't even something you've tried to do, but something that has come naturally to you by taking a moment for yourself and letting go of any obvious tension. As you rest your hand on your lap, notice the sensation of relaxation and calm you've already achieved, and say to yourself the word warm. Focus on your hands, letting your hands feel a sense of warmth. Create that warmth and say to yourself, my hands are warm. And as you do, notice the sensation that you've created of warmth in those hands. And now say the word heavy and notice how heavy your resting hands are and say to yourself, my hands are warm and heavy. My hands are warm and heavy. Now focus on your feet, saying to yourself, my feet are warm and heavy. My feet are warm and heavy. It's amazing how as you say this, my feet are warm and heavy, you can begin to feel a sense of warmth from within and a sense of heaviness. This is really your first learning in this relaxation exercise that you can control the way you feel. It's true both physically and mentally, no matter how difficult life situations are, and that sense of warmth and heaviness brings a sense of relief from the weariness of life, letting you recharge the mind and body in the time that we have in this session. Now again, notice your breathing, smooth and rhythmic, relaxing even deeper with each breath. And although it might feel magical to relax this deeply, especially since you haven't felt this calm in a long time, this is a totally natural state. It's one that you have created rather than one I've created. And because of that, you can re-experience it at any time, and I will teach you how to do that in a moment. Right now, focus on your desires. To be free from panic or anxiety by feeling a state of calm. Notice how the sense of heaviness is like a calming anchor, allowing you to feel physically calm even if your mind might wander or race. Perhaps you desire hope rather than depression, and through the simple exercise of creating warmth and heaviness, you can see how you have the ability within you to not only create those sensations, but also a state of hopefulness. I don't know why, but water always makes me feel hopeful. Maybe because it reminds me that nothing stays the same, or perhaps because of its power and energy to revitalize my spirit. Do you desire freedom? Success? Take a moment and create an affirmation that reflects your heartfelt desire. You could say something like this: I'm free from stress, or I can create hope from inside. You could even focus on a single word like happiness or calm or forgiveness. It's amazing how creative our minds are. You can actually hear the water in the background. As you take a moment to focus on that word, happiness, calm, forgiveness, or that affirmation that you've created, and repeat it in your mind, seeing the letters as you do, spelling it out, hearing yourself speak those words, and noticing the feeling that these positive words or affirmations bring. It really is amazing how simply saying something manifests it as reality, but remember, everything that is or was a thought first. And to be hopeful or calm, and to be forgiving, you must begin with a thought. Then you can truly experience this more and more each and every day. Great way to reinforce this thought, which, like rain, fills the stream and leads to the river and results in the formation of a powerful waterfall, is to write that affirmation on a card or a sticky note and tape it to the bathroom mirror or your dashboard, or to the monitor of your computer. Let it be a constant reminder, despite other factors in life, of your ability to turn your thought, your mental energy, into emotions and success. And relax even deeper, noticing how remarkably easy it's been to set aside a few moments to re-energize, and even though life requires action, you now have a starting point for re-energizing during difficult times, and a starting point for creating thoughts which turn into results. In fact, you can even congratulate yourself for taking the time to invest in your success, knowing that by starting this process of hope, calm, and happiness, as you continue to relax, enjoy just another moment or so of this state that you've created. Never asleep, but deeply relaxed. Enjoying your ability to experience serenity, creativity, and to let any temporary stress pass without escalating. And as we end near the end of our time, you can open your eyes at any point, or you can keep them closed for another moment or two, while you feel the floor below your feet and the air in the room around you. Maybe even another moment to continue to see or hear that waterfall that you've created. But begin, since it's time to conclude today's lesson, to feel a sense of energy, to let the muscles in your body and your spirit feel energized. And if your eyes aren't open yet, it's now time to open the eyes, feeling refreshed, energetic, and ready to be positive in every situation, in every way, each and every day. One. two, three, eyes open, feeling fantastic. That is a simple process of relaxation training that incorporates a number of different strategies, including direct suggestion, including progressive muscle relaxation, including autogenic training, and a number of other aspects. And I took about 10 minutes to do that in our demonstration. I may actually take about 30 minutes to go through that script with some of my clients who really need to learn how to take physical control over their bodies. There are a number of other strategies which I utilize with my clients, all of which are predicated on helping them to feel awesome. At not only a physical level, but an emotional level as well. And my hope is that you will actually take this script or even this recording and share it with your clients so that they can derive the benefits of these evidence-based protocols as well.